I'm a teacher. I am a high school teacher. I've tried middle school, didn't like it. Eighth graders are of the devil, and no one told me that in teaching school. I taught AP U.S. History in Williamson County for 16 years, and am proud to be able to present. Volunteer Voices is coming to a library near you. How many of you have heard of Volunteer Voices? Okay, good. Well, they're there. The voices are there. So let's talk a little bit about it. Let's face it, librarians. You're not known for your volume. You're known for your volumes. That's a joke. Get it? Yeah. Okay. They are the smartest people in the school. But who would know it? You need to get out of the library more. Now, I happen to be a school teacher who love librarians, because when I was teaching, I was married to the overhead projector. And who kept the extra bulbs for overhead projectors was a huge secret. And only a few people could infiltrate the system well enough to find out it was the librarians. So I would take them chocolate in exchange for an overhead projector bulb and an extension cord. And when I needed something blown up on the copy machine, they were the only ones in the building who had the savvy to do it. I love librarians. So it was a fit for me to join the library world, at least temporarily in my professional growth, to talk about Volunteer Voices. Now, let me just briefly review those slides that flashed by. Volunteer Voices is an IMLS grant, and it's been a 3-year process. The concept in the beginning was to develop a grassroots collection of primary source images collected across Tennessee. Now, you all represent institutions that have fine digital collections, I'm sure, and we have collected from several of those. But the beauty of this particular project is that we were able to go into communities who had never heard of digital media and digitize some of their collections. Because, you know, you all have a wealth of stuff, using that term in a very friendly way, in your buildings that nobody knows about. You need to get out of the library more. And part of my objective this year has been to train librarians to be a little more schmoozy, because librarians are very quiet, focused people, and I need to be able to rah-rah what you do. So let me do that today. And I think Volunteer Voices is going to give you a method to do that. Okay, let's see if we can proceed slowly. The one thing that has attracted you to this organization and this conference is your love for books, right? Talk to me. Okay, not anymore. The library world has changed. Since I left Centennial High School 2 years ago in Williamson County, they have a coffee shop in the school library. Now, you have not tried to study or teach primary source analysis in the library without the whirl of the cappuccino machine in the background. It's kind of weird, but the kids love it. And it brings to the library a whole nother type of customer or client or patron. Libraries are a changing place, and you're going to have to accept that fact. And I'm sure you have. You have LCD projectors in your place. You have digital this, digital that, and you need to use technology to get the word out about what cool stuff that you have. How quickly you have had to learn the LCD projector, which I thought was an illegal drug. When they first introduced it, LCD, they kept talking about LCD. What is that? I thought broadband was a new type of lingerie. Java is something you buy. Oh, y'all are slow. Java is something you buy at Starbucks. What is Java? So we're all learning, okay? It's not your mother's library anymore. I've been doing some research on libraries just so I could talk to you all today. And Tracy Vogel's a freelancer for Edutopia, which is one of those listservs that teacher people belong to. Says, all of these new technologies have something in common. They increase the amount of information students, teachers, and librarians have to wade through. And then there's a debate online about whether this is a digital forest of information overload, so says Thomas Washington. He realized in his Masters of Library Science, was that MLS, is that right, degree, that it's not about books anymore. My son-in-law, when I went to work for Volunteer Voices, because my office is in the old Hoskins Library on campus at UT, he said, are you working in periodicals? I've not seen one periodical at UT. I don't know where they are. Pamela P. Barron says it's really not information overload. It's just a different way of teaching the same old stuff that you all have always done. The librarian's role is still the same. Librarian to the interface between the information and the user. That's been your whole history. And you just have to find different ways to present that information. So you have to become techies. Here's the good news. Y'all are doing it right. 99.4% of students, grades 3 through 12, believe libraries and their services help them become better learners. And this is from a Rutgers University study. 92.4% said computers in libraries help improve their overall academic work. And there are people who don't have access to computers at home who come to your places to do their research. So you're getting a different kind of genre of people who are coming in. How do we continue to improve our services? We have to embrace technology and provide for our customers opportunities to learn. It should not be so difficult to get a library card. You want people to come in. You've got to get out and get them. We're not using textbooks anymore in the K through 12 area. Well, we use them. Don't tell the textbook people that. We use them for doorstops and things like book holders. That's boring. We don't engage our students with textbooks. And so we have to learn how to engage our students. And you folks, as librarian media specialists, have to be able to energize that to your teachers and your researchers and the people that use you as well. Primary sources may be your answer. Now, you all know what primary sources are. They must have taught you that in library school. But the folks that I work with every day, teachers K through 12, sometimes K through 16, don't really understand primary sources. So then you have to become a teacher of what a primary source is. And I taught for 10 weeks in a little North Knoxville Title I 8th grade school. And bless their hearts, they didn't understand primary sources, and I was all about them. So when they were acting so poorly, as 8th graders tend to do, I would sit down and make them tell a primary source story from their family. And then I was able to weave history information through that. Primary sources are going to be your hook. What is a primary source and how do I teach it? Well, this is a comprehensive list. I may have borrowed this from the State Library website. I don't know. I borrow a lot from a lot of people and try to do the proper library referencing, but that's not really my focus. You know, I just steal the good stuff. And here, I show this to teachers and say, okay, look at this list, and is there anything up here that surprises you about a primary source? So I'm going to ask you guys the same question. Yes, ma'am. Okay, you obviously don't like antiques. If you go into an antique store, you will see old washboards, which I guess is an early appliance, old irons, that kind of thing. And that's a lesson that my older kids are able to do. I give them scavenger hunt points for going into antique stores and finding things they can compare. Now, this is what happens. When they go home at night, they talk about their excavating at antique stores. They come back to class with a picture, a price, what it was cost, what it would have cost in the olden days. And we talk about the changes. Are they talking about American history at home and in the hall? What did you find on your scavenger hunt? Well, I know they are, because one day a group of students came in, girls, and they were giggling as I was trying to call class to order. And they had something in their hand. They gathered up around my desk and they said, Miss Kemp, we have something we bought for you at an antique store. We don't know what it is. Will you share it with us? So I'm thinking it's a bug because they had it, you know, in their hand. And I thought, okay, I'll do this. Anything for, you know, teachable moment. So I put my hand out and they put in my hand a garter belt, a little green stretchy thing, you know, like my English teacher used to wear at Messick High School in 1974 when I thought she was 100. She may have been. And so I said, oh, that's a garter belt. And they all go, thinking Victoria's Secret garter belts. And I said, no, let me show you. So I took my garter belt And it's those little squishy things like girls put their, y'all know, right? Y'all know what garter belts look like in the, back in the day. And, I put it on over my khaki pants and showed them. They said, that's the grossest thing that I've ever seen in my life. I explained to them about stockings before the days of pantyhose, probably invented by a man, and that they would put them on and roll them down and knot them, and that little garter belt would keep all that in place. Well, they were disgusted even further. Now, I bet you they went home that night and at dinner said, Miss Kemp, put on a garter belt in class. It's a wonder I ever got tenure. But were they talking about history? You bet they were. And were they talking about it everywhere they went? Miss Kemp did this, Miss Kemp did that. And they all then went out to antique stores to find other inappropriate things for me to model in class. But this is a great way to begin to teach primary sources. I also use a newspaper a lot in the classroom. Now, we can argue whether you think that's primary or secondary, and that's a great conversation piece with the kiddos. This is a much more fun way of teaching. And I think that genealogists would find this referencing site helpful as well. So let's kind of look at what's going on. Since 1997 was the first year that the U.S. Census even asked who has a computer in the home, we've come a long way. Just a little over 10 years, and look what we're doing. We're projecting images from a little box back there that's plugged into electricity. And what we have done on Volunteer Voices is we've taken documents, some dating back to the 1700s, and put them in some kind of machine called a scanner, I'm pretty sure, and digitized and, you know, cataloged and all those library things that have to happen. And now have used that for free website that you can pull up in your libraries, teachers can pull up in their homes, students can pull up. It's amazing what we've done. And this was only an idea on a grant 2.5 years ago. It's amazing. In 2000, 4% of households have at least one member who uses the internet. And using the internet or owning a computer and internet now have become pretty much synonymous. The schools we find are the level the playing field between the haves and the have-nots, and I have to remind my folks of that every workshop I do. The vision of Volunteer Voices was to actually to provide this free, searchable database to meet the needs, and I think the most important group to meet these needs are the K-12 audience. The standards, if you're familiar with what keeps us functioning in the classroom, both at the national and at the Tennessee level, call for analysis of primary source documents as young as the fourth grade. And I've been asked to speak to K-3 audiences about how they use primary sources, which requires me to do a little out-of-the-box thinking. The national standardized test, those high-stakes tests that determines what schools are good and which schools are not good, are based on analysis of primary sources. If we don't begin to have that conversation with our users, it's going to freak the children out, and they're freaked out anyway over high-stakes testing. The Volunteer Digital Collection is based on the standards. There it goes again. It's kind of weird. The standards of Tennessee Social Studies, arrows 1 through 10, and they're searchable that way. So today I want you to acknowledge that there is such a thing as Volunteer Voices. There's the website for you in big bold letters, www.volunteervoices.org. The website itself is undergoing a facelift as we speak. So if you give us a month and log on, it will be pretty and more easily searched, if that's correct English. I want you to begin to look at it at your institution and adopt it. Spread the word. It's a fabulous conglomeration of different things. And then applaud it in your community. So, oh, look, it's doing crazy things. Okay. Now, this is how I teach primary sources, K-12. I tell the kids we're going to SOAP the primary source. Now, this is an advanced placement acronym that I stole. And don't tell them that I'm using it statewide because I'll go to AP jail. But every child likes to say the word soap. Let's soap, let's soap. So you teach them day one. You can do this with your adult learners as well. Let's analyze this primary source document very simply. Let's look at the subject. Let's look at the occasion, which may not necessarily mean a specific date. Let's look at the audience of its intent and why this thing came about, the purpose. And so that's how we talk. And I write it on the board and I say the word about 95 times the first week of class. And then by the second week, when I pull up a primary source, either on the overhead projector, because I'm old fashioned, or with this fancy contraption called an LCD, they know what to do. They can do it in groups. They can do it individually. They can discuss it. There's really no wrong answer. That's the beauty of primary sources. Oh yeah, I guess if you were a historian, you might get a little crazy if they miss decade label. But we're talking about just getting that hook in the knowledge realm. So we're going to soap some pictures together today. These are all volunteer voices. Okay, what do you think this is? Talk to me. It's a library. Okay, that's the subject. What is the occasion? Let's think about a decade, because I know you're not going to get it right. So what do you notice that would limit your decade choices? I can't hear you. Why? No computers. So we know that's before 1997. That gives us a little more time. White socks with black shoes. And I don't know if you can see the guy that's on the end of the table, but he's wearing some kind of contraption on his head. We call that a beanie, I think. Okay, does that give you a clue? 50s? 40s? Who say 40s? Raise your hand. 50s? Who don't care? No. Okay, we do have electricity, right? So that's another. And that's what I walk the kids through. You know, what do you see that could dignify what decade it is? Okay, let's see how... Anybody know the location, just on a whim? Besides the library, I know that. A college library, how do you know that? Who said that? The beanie, yeah, probably. And if you were real savvy, you would see that back right window is open, so probably non-air conditioned, maybe. Okay. Lambeth College Library in Jackson, 1920 to 1930. So we were a little off on our decades. I think the beanies should have thrown you into the 1920s. Who was this for? This was for prospective Lambeth students, a part of their publicity. And they still have it posted in their library. It's framed, but also for historic records. How far the library's come, you might see. Okay, we'll see if we can do better. What is this? Okay, you're getting the theme here. This is a library. Does anybody recognize this particular library? Oh, come on. Okay, can you tell me it's an old or a new building? How do you know it's an old building? Fireplace? And the windows are arched, gothic something? And they're huge, right. Okay, decade time, occasion for soaping it. Huh? 50s? If we assume that chick that's standing up is a librarian, I want you to look at what she's got on. Those stockings she may have on a garter belt. And high heel shoes. Was that taught in library school that that's how you had to dress? That's why I didn't go there. Okay, let's look. Cleveland Library, Cleveland, Tennessee, 1945. And that audience was library patrons. Again, they're trying to advertise people to come into the library. Do you all advertise? Some say yes, some say no. If you don't, you need to. I just met a bunch of Maryville librarians. Anybody in here from Maryville besides you? I've lived in Maryville 18 months. I don't have a library card. I didn't know till last month where the library was. It should not be that difficult. They should offer it in the Chamber of Commerce welcome package. Here's the library. You thought about that? Okay. Cleveland Library. Purpose. This is a great historical piece. It's the first permanent site of the Cleveland Public Library established in 1923. Okay. I got to tell you another story before we soap some more. I was doing a workshop in Jackson with social studies teachers. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with many social studies teachers, but a lot of them are coaches. And I knew that because I used to be married to a coach, used to be the operative word there. And I knew that they were pretty stuck in their ruts as far as teaching, worksheets, coloring the maps. They liked the videos, you know, let's plug in a map. a movie and watch it for 4 days. So my goal was to get them outside the box a little bit, and I had to show them how easy it was to use primary sources. So I arbitrarily went on Vol Voices and made copies of 5 pictures and just picked arbitrarily transportation as a thing because that's an obvious thing. And then that way we could put the pictures in chronological order and we could do some little gamey activities and get them up moving. So we did all that. I passed them around after we soaked them. We asked them to put them in chronological order, which they failed horribly. And as I was passing them around, this big burly coach in the middle stood up and he is weeping. And he said, "Nancy, this is my grandfather in this picture." Now, it was arbitrary. It was just happenstance that I picked that picture at that particular, look, I still get cold chills thinking about it, at that particular audience. And I've realized the power of that hook in using local primary source images. And I told a group the other night, he will tell that story as I do every time he gets up in front of a group of students. So again, in 2.5 years, we've taken an image that wasn't digitized, that was loaned to us from Jackson-Madison County Public Library, and put it in this collection for anybody to use. And he made a connection with his grandfather, and he will tell the world, and Jackson-Madison County Public will get praises forever. And it all made possible with volunteer voices. So you see the importance. And there are probably stories like that everywhere. In Tullahoma, I showed a picture of, whatever county that is. I get confused. A home life, depression era home life picture. And, you could see out the open door where the chickens were coming in and out of, a lake in the background. And when I was showing that to a bunch of Tullahoma teachers, the county will hit me in just a minute. They said, "I know exactly where that picture was taken." And their students will recognize exactly where that picture is taken. I showed a picture of a Knoxville city map made in 1924, downtown Knoxville, on the LCD projector. And you can clearly see Gay Street, Market Street, and some of the other big streets that are still there. There are also buildings that are identified on that map. Well, I at a workshop this week with PhD students at UT, showing them how to use primary sources. And the lady in the back said, "You know, my grandmother used to take me to Miller's Department Store, which was very clearly marked on that map, and take me underground. Apparently there was a tunnel there that now UT has a bunch of stuff stored." And another lady, out of 8 people in the room, 2 of them had a connection to Miller's Department Store, and they were able to reminisce over their young childhood by primary source. Who would have thought it? And then there is a precious picture in Volunteer Voices, and I encourage you to go find it. I wish I could tell you where it was. But it is a black child and a white child, side by side. The white child is in a white pinafore and plow boots. So that kind of gives you a time period reference. And then the black child is in a black dress and plow boots. But they're sitting together. We have no background information. We have put together that it's probably the 1930s, maybe early 1940s, because of the plow boots. And so I was asking this PhD class what do they think was happening, because the fact that there was a black child and a white child sitting side by side is going to give you some time references as well. And the white child is smiling, and the black child looks like she's about to cry. So I was asking them, you know, let's analyze this. What could be wrong here? Remember, there's no wrong answer because we don't know. And a black woman said, "I cried on my school picture day the first 8 years I was in public school because she didn't have the clothes that the white children had. She was the only African-American child in her classes. And the teacher apparently had a group comb where she combed everybody's hair before the pictures." We wouldn't do that today. But the black child had her hair in dreadlocks and the comb would not work. And that made her sad. So just some, you know, reference from a simple picture. It's just amazing what can happen and what stories you hear. Okay, you have one more chance. What is this? Bookmobile. Now, when I showed this to the PhD class the other day, there were some young folks in there that didn't know what a bookmobile was. How sad is that? What was the purpose of the bookmobile? Right, and making your services available to those people who didn't drive or didn't have the transportation or couldn't afford to come to the city. Is that right? All right. Bookmobiles were a product of what era? Okay. Late 40s, early 50s. And the librarian is on the left. Yeah, your left. Look what she's wearing to travel on the road. You've got to have your hat on. They never had bad hair days, I guess. They just put a hat on. Hose or stockings that were the fad, probably garter belt, and high heels. And she's not on paved concrete, right? You see what she's working on. And she probably did that all day long. This is a patron in the middle. She's also in a dress. Ladies, do you just wear dresses when you go to work? No. I've quit buying them. I think they're of the devil, too. Because they require some kind of hose, right? You got to put those on. And this woman is waiting either with her library card in her hand or her overdue slip. Something is in her hand. But she, just to go to the bookmobile, now these chicks are all wearing hats. Okay? And you have to love the zeal of the bookmobile. How often did they come around? I don't know. Once a month. You seem like you have quite a bit of experience back there with this bookmobile. did you travel with one or?
No,
it
came from my mother's yard. My mother was the community librarian. And she had everybody brought
it back to my house and she had a little box to turn in and then we checked our new box. Like a regional center. Kinda. Yes, ma'am. Yeah. And it's great to show the kids this, you know. Well, for lots of reasons. The car in the background is a study in of itself. Let's see if we're right. Sumner County Bookmobile, 1949. Audience, library patrons, citizens of Sumner County. This is a form of advertisement. So you see, I'm really making a statement here for you folks to go back and do a little publicity on your own place because, you know, it is a marketing world that we live in. Publicity for services offered by the library. This is what the website will look like today if you just cannot stand it and you go directly to it when you leave here. And you click on digital collection and you will go directly to the now 6,000 images that are available for you to use. In another month, the website will have a new face on it. It will be pretty. It will be easily searched, more easily searched. There will be opportunities for you to type in your county or to scroll over the map and hit on your mouse over and put it on the map of your county. And all of those images from your area will pop up. You can also search by era if you're interested in the teaching part of it. And names will also work. Probably by the 1st of June, all 10,000 images, which was the goal of the original IMLS grant, will be up and running. Amazing, amazing collections. We have sheet music. Now, I don't know if you've been by our booth, but we have some exciting music that's happening down there with a great, great video. Tennessee is the music capital of the world. And let me give you some examples of how you can use sheet music in your teaching. Sheet music art, the cover really represent an art form. It went again, didn't it? We have images. We'll go back to music in a minute. Images of children. There's that picture I was telling you about. See how sweet that is? You think, is there anything we've missed about this picture? You were analyzing this. Do you see a story that we've missed? Could you agree that it might be the picture day at school? And we can probably figure out a date for those of us who are a little historically savvy. Anybody want to go there with me? Brown versus Board of Education, which integrated the schools, was 1954. Okay. Now, in Tennessee, that didn't always happen until maybe late 1950s, early 1960s. I graduated from Messick High School in Memphis. I'm not going to tell you when. But my junior year, which would have been, I'm not going to tell you when, would have been the first time that they actually bused for integration purposes in Memphis. And there are communities that are still fighting how to figure out how to do it in Nashville for one. So these are some other things. The sheet music, let me go back to, the actual music notes are on there. And, if you were real savvy and wanted to have a great public event in your library, you could get your local band or a school band to play some of these historic tunes publicly, you know, and have a big gala. But the music, the sheet music, the cover itself is a great piece to study, soaping it as well. And then certainly the music. I encourage language arts people to look at the lyrics of these musics and see what literary terms that they can find. It's usually poetry. It's usually rhymed, so they can study it that way. Prominent, famous people. If you've not been in a cave the last month, you know that Martin Luther King has been in the news quite a bit, from the national to the local level, and had a great role in the civil rights movement in Tennessee. And I love to tell my kids, I was 11 when Martin Luther King was assassinated. I was in Memphis at the time, and they all go, oh, what? They also think I lived through World War I, so, you know, that I have to just remind them I'm just really not that old. But I remember my mother being so frightened at the violence that was happening around us, and we were scheduled to go on a Girl Scout camporee that weekend. And he was assassinated on Thursday, and we were supposed to leave town on Friday. We were escorted out of town by the National Guard. And that's a pretty, you know, vivid memory that I will always have. And now I look at the images and read the stories of what was happening, and it really is traumatic. Newspaper clippings. These happen to be both about the 19th Amendment. Now, I don't know if your Tennessee history is what it ought to be, but Tennessee was the 36th state in the passage of the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote. There's great stories about that guy from Niota, Tennessee. I'm not exactly sure where that is. Named Harry Byrne changed his vote at the last minute because of a letter that's also on Volunteer Voices he received from his mother about making sure that he helps Mrs. Catt put the rat back in ratification. And he was not counting on supporting the amendment, and at the last minute changed his vote. It's known as the War of Roses. There were red roses pro-suffrage, yellow roses anti-suffrage, brought all kinds of wild-speaking women from across the country to Nashville to the Hermitage Hotel, and it was hot, and the emotions were high, and I love to set that story up and then have the kids soap the cartoons. It works just as well. Great stories. Tennessee itself is full of rich stories, as you well know. But if you look at the national storyline as well, we have the Alvin York, we have Oak Ridge, we have 101st in Clarksville area, civil rights, I'm missing something, Civil War. You know, there's a lot of stuff, not to mention the three presidents that are all demonstrating some of their feats on Volunteer Voices. I happen to be doing three teachy workshops. If you have a friend who is a teacher or you yourself want to come learn more about methods of using primary sources, the closest to this area is in Chattanooga on April 25th and Middle Tennessee at Sue's new place, Clayton Class Library at Motlow State Community College. We're only collecting 15 teachers to come to this, and I'm about halfway there in all three of these. If you're from West Tennessee and want to come to the one in Dyersburg, you're more than welcome. You can go online at www.volunteervoices.org, and the registration is there. Just click on the Educators tab, and all that application and information is there. If you attend, you get a $131 travel stipend. If you are a teacher, we will reimburse your county up to $60 for subpay. You get free resources, free food, and 6 hours with me. It does not get much better than that. Anybody have a question? Yes, ma'am. There is no worry of copyright for Volunteer Voices for educational purposes. Now, are you going to make a T-shirt or something? Yeah. Yeah, no, that it's all been okay. Yes. Anybody else? Yes, sir. Right now, it's all documentary graphics. As I mentioned, the grant ends in November, and there is discussion about extending it maybe in another form, trying to get the partners. I always forget the partners, but they're a big part of this grant, trying to decide what the next phase should be. And we're looking at oral histories and also ways of putting artifacts on here. Did I answer the question correctly? Library ease. When I was at Whittle Springs, which was that little Knoxville Title I school, now you have to understand I was traumatized from the move anyway, and my stepdaughter had twins in Knoxville in the middle of all this, and my husband started a new business, and I didn't want to be where I was. But those little eighth graders who live in a three-block world, the only way I could hook them into teaching them history was to get them to understand that they were primary sources. As dysfunctional as their little families were, and believe me, they were. When I asked them about to bring a recipe in from whoever cooks for them at home, or if they cook for themselves, and we talked about recipes and the importance of family traditions at the holidays, their first memories of school, you know, just trying to get them to focus on their own situation. And then I use primary sources to give them hope for the future, because there's so many people who we have on Volunteer Voices who have survived trauma in their lives. And primary sources and their powerful stories give these children who see no tomorrow a hope, you know, that I can survive whatever trauma that's going on in my life. They weren't connecting to the book and the traditional teaching ways, so I just had to think outside the box. They also had never seen cotton growing. It's hard to teach the cotton gin and the importance of the cotton gin to the entire South without showing them cotton. So I'm from Memphis. I taught in West Tennessee and went to school at Martin. And, you know, I grew up around cotton. I've even picked a few cotton bowls in my time. And so I was desperate to find cotton in Knoxville in February. So I snuck out of a professional development meeting one day, and I went to this high-end home decor place on Kingston Pike. Really just killing time. I was depressed. And dang, if they didn't have table decorations made with stalks of cotton, plants of cotton, whole plants. And I said, can I buy that? She said, yeah. I would have paid $100 for the cotton. So I took it back. I gave each child a chance to feel the seeds in the middle, you know, because touchy-feely stuff is a great way for them to appreciate primary sources. So that was my teaching lesson for the day. It was cotton. Well, I'm going to go plant these seeds. I can pull cotton. But in the bowls, the stick stuff, you know, that hurt their hands. And just imagine acres and acres of bending over and doing this. It was a real, real lesson for those kids. And primary sources is where it's all at. In the beginning, the grant paid for three content specialists. One lived in West Tennessee, one lived in Middle, and one lived in East. And they were familiar with the standards, and they kind of just went to the bigger repositories first and then asked them for references to the smaller ones. But here's a weird story. I'm thinking it's Chester County. I could be wrong. I know it was a small rural county in West Tennessee. When our content specialists went to find their historical archives, they were in shoeboxes in somebody's closet. So if you take the education piece out, we have revitalized that county's history. And imagine being from that county and saying, I want to see the history of our county, and it being in somebody's shoebox or in a barn or something. I would be amiss if I don't recognize Mr. Ken Middleton at the back. Was a co-PI in this whole process. So if you have any real technical questions, he's the one to ask. He is a librarian at MTSU. I'm sure you have a bigger title than that, but that's okay. Ken has also helped me out with some teacher workshops. He's a great speaker. Then tells me jokes, but, you know. If you have some collections at your institution, or if you think if you're a college, university, or public, whatever, we are still looking at expanding the partner list. There are currently, you're going to ask me all of them, aren't you? There are currently 10 or 11. Let me see if I can help me. UT, NTSU, Vanderbilt, TSU, Brentwood Public, University of Memphis, Memphis Public, East Tennessee Historical Society, McClung, that's 9. Oh, TSLA. Is that 10? Okay, I did pretty good. 10 partners. And we've established 3 regional centers that have developed, and we're also looking to expand that so that if there's smaller institutions who don't want to come to Nashville, Knoxville, or Memphis to digitize, or, you know, there's some technical issues, that you could go to a regional center and let that digital stuff happen. The Tennessee was not declared a state until 17. When, girls? 90? 96. She wins the prize. And a lot of those early Tennessee documents, State of Franklin, and the Indian Native American connection are hard to find. In fact, North Carolina may have more of it, you know, which requires a trip over there and some cooperation to get that. There is a sketchbook done by a Swiss artist that's from Knoxville Public, I think, maybe. McClung, one of those, that shows his images of the Knoxville area. There's not language, it's just art, but it's scanned artwork. It's kind of an unusual piece. And something it just dawned on me about midway through the grant process, that libraries or institutions who have images on Volunteer Voices, their main objective is to get people to come into their libraries and look at the actual stuff. And so that never occurred to me for some reason. So think of it maybe in that perspective, that if you have great collections that are not even digitized yet and you want them to be added, for the prospect not only of giving publicity, there's that word again, to your institution, but also getting people to come in from across the state, to use. I'm doing currently a teacher traveling trunk for the Tennessee State Museum on another grant, and my topic is women's suffrage. That's why I knew so much about that. And a lot of the documents that I'm using in the trunk are Volunteer Voices, and we're going to send that trunk, you know, all over the place. So it's kind of a good outlay for publicity. Anybody else? Okay, y'all have been great. Enjoy the rest of your conference. Thank you.